Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Cheese State University. Cheese State University was created for dedicated cheese professionals seeking to deepen their knowledge, sharpen their skills, and build connections. Join them in the Ivy League of cheese education at cheesestateuniversity.com.
Welcome to the Grape Nation, your weekly wine journey. Our guest is Marvina Robinson. We'll talk to Marvina about Beef Stuyvesant, champagne, and a lot more. We'll taste some of Marvina's bubbles for our weekly wine sip and maybe during the show. I'm your host, Sam Ben Ruby. Stay with us for the Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio Network. We bring wine to the people. Bedford Stuy's own Marvina Robinson left the neighborhood to attend Norfolk State University, an HBCU. Her love of the bubbly started when she'd come home between semesters, pop some champagne with her friends to catch up and celebrate. Marvina continued on to Columbia University, receiving her master's, working in finance and risk management. Her love for champagne was strong enough to take some risk. She traveled to France, packed in her career, and started Beef Stuyvesant Champagne in Brooklyn. She is one of the few women of color champagne owners in the world. Marvina Robinson makes over a half dozen cuvées, including a rosé and a cuvée reserve. Welcome to the Grape Nation, Marvina.
Thank you for having me.
We are talking to Marvina face-to-face at the Heritage Radio Studios at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Brooklyn is in the house today.
As always.
Marvina shot over from Bedford Stuy. So it's nice to sit in person with you. All right. So let's get started here. Let's lay a little foundation.
It's rock and roll. Roll and rock.
Let's give people some intel on where you came from and what you're about. So I'm curious with you and the business and, you know, everything I know about you, what was that first interaction and connection with champagne and, you know, why did it stick, you know, and did that influence what you're doing today? I mean, is it that or no?
I don't know. That's a really good question. I just think that when I was younger, at a legal age, I want to emphasize at a legal age, me and my friends would sip champagne. That was it. We liked it. It's what we saw in videos. It was cool. You know, I as I got older, a little bit mature, I said, okay, this should be my drink of choice.
So of all the things to drink, beer, booze, you guys had this affinity for champagne.
Oh, we were a group of upscale ladies, you know.
Okay. Upscale and classy.
That's right. We didn't do beer. We minimized liquor. We like to have our glasses.
I love that. So that's the answer to the, you know, connection. That's really your first, you know, interaction. All right. So now I need you to take me through your journey in life and wine that got you to your business, Beef Stuyvesant. But let me set you up a little. Talk about the point that you packed in a pretty impressive education background and about a two-decade career in finance to create your brand.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get into
the details later.
And how cold. It's not like, you know, you left and started. So tell me about, you know, the beginnings in getting here?
I would say, one, it was not a traditional route and it wasn't an intentional route. So I would say my journey started out naturally as I graduated. First, I want to say I went to the best high school in Brooklyn, Boys and Girls.
So that's where
we left that. That's the first where it all kicked off at. So I'm a kangaroo, class of 95. From there, you know, I started my post-educational where I studied at Norfolk State University. I had a Bachelor of Science in Biology, nowhere near wine. I left, graduated from college. I ended up in finance, just consulting because I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I got introduced to the finance world and I said, oh, I like this. Worked there for a couple of years. And then I realized I wanted to be competitive in the industry. So I left work full time. I studied at Columbia University full time, got my master's in arts and statistics. But I just didn't stay there for...
Why that? I mean, did that fit into what you wanted to do?
At the time, yes. Yeah. So I wanted to build models, trading models for trading desks. So I wanted my resume to stand out versus going traditional routes of MBA. I wanted to show my technical component in my mindset. And I did like math. So I chose statistics. And I just didn't stay there just for the minimum requirements. I actually stayed a little bit longer and took classes in different schools just to get like a broader knowledge. From there, I got recruited to work at a major investment bank. Credit Suisse was actually one of my first banks that hired me straight out of grad school. I worked there for a couple of years, moved around a little bit, went from trading. I did a little bit of risk management, went back to commodities. Commodities, one of my favorite products I like to work with. When I first graduated from undergrad, I actually worked at Amaretta Hess, HECO, in day trading. And then from there, I was back in finance. And champagne was a hobby at first. I used to send my clients gifts, some of my coworkers gift champagne, include the note of what type of champagne it is.
As a beverage, that was your beverage of
choice?
That
was my beverage of choice, you know.
From back to with the girls to working through finance, it was always a thing to you.
Yeah, champagne. So I did go through a phase of my Sex and the City phase where I had to have my Cosmos. But liquor was a little bit too rough for me. You know, you pack those things on, you like in La La Land, they hit you the next day. But I always think like wine or wine spritzers was really like sophisticated. And I was a little bit young in my career. So I was really trying to fit in what should be my look when I go out for networking with clients or with my coworkers or holiday parties. And, you know, there's a lot of booze flying around. So I just had to find my niche. And I tried wine, still wine's cool, but champagne, you can never go wrong with champagne. And that's like, everybody's always happy with champagne.
That's, you know, I'm a big champagne fan. I mean, as curious as I am about the story, I love the fact that, you know, your concentration is on champagne. All right, so sounds like a fairly prolific career in finance. I mean, great companies. You jumped around in skills and strengths because you were interested and inquisitive.
Yeah, so like my finance career, it was a great career. You know, I kind of stumbled upon industry just like how I stumbled upon wine. And I just found my niche. What interested me at the time is kind of where I float around. That's the good thing about finance because it's such a broad industry. You can kind of work on different things. And that's where I found myself. Like, though working on a desk was very great, I kind of got into like the risk management of the side. And I wanted to go back to the desk. So I just found skill sets that worked with me, what I knew. And as I grew in my career, I just moved to where I thought would be best fit. Not a jumping around, but taking longer depth time to figure out.
So at some point, I don't know how close it was to when you left. Mm-hmm. At some point, you're saying to yourself, or you see something, or something gets in your head, and you say, all right, I've been doing this. I'm good. I like it. But I got this idea. It's a business. Maybe I should be on my own. Maybe it's champagne. How does that ramp up?
That's not how it went.
Well, that's... So my interpretation was a bad one.
It was a bad one. I love how you put the little empathetic voice in it.
So tell me.
So I would say, and this is just my story. I can only share what I became unhappy in finance. And it wasn't nothing wrong with my firms. It was more about myself. I wanted to do something other. So here's the backstory that you might not have known about me is I've owned two businesses before I actually officially launched B. Stuyvesant. I just was scared to take the leap of faith of being an entrepreneur 100%. I didn't put my time into it. So I used to own a cafe First, I owned an indoor cycling studio because I love to spin. I still love to spin. So I was like, oh, if I build my own, I don't have to pay as much. And I was an instructor as well. I got certified. That was one of my first businesses. And then I also owned a cafe on Myrtle Avenue. So we call 724 Coffee Bar and Cafe. Again.
What years are we talking here?
Oh, my gosh. Maybe 2000. I started in 2013.
And this is while you're working?
This is while I was working
full-time. You're doing these kind of business gigs and you're working full-time. Okay.
So the business was, it didn't have 100% of my attention, though I tried. Like I would go in the mornings, I would go to, Jetro's, all this other stuff. But I wasn't fully dedicated to it. It piqued me, but I was like, I had a career path. Like I had this thing embedded in my head. This is not what I went to school for, blah, 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 blah. But I just said, you know what? It is what it is. So I started looking into champagne because I was gifting people with champagne. It became a hobby. So I started doing a deeper dive, reading about it. And I was like, well, if I'm reading and learning about it, I need to go to Champagne. So I started going to France and I started like visiting different areas of Champagne, trying different champagnes at the actual vineyards, just learning to immerse myself in the culture because I wanted to be, make sure I know what I'm talking about versus just a reading knowledge, testing my reading knowledge with actual vineyard owners to make sure they still match. And then, naturally, when you work with a product hand in hand, they can going to give you something that you're not going to get out of a book.
Right.
So that's where I started from. And
so it was more about education and being on the ground and seeing and feeling it.
And applying it. And then I realized, there's so many, not to sound like a AA person, but I love drinking champagne and I wanted to, I researched and I said, as I got more in depth with it and I said, there's so many beautiful grower champagnes or vintages I would love to introduce consumers to here in New York, here specifically in Brooklyn, because that's where I'm born and raised from. I decided that I was going to open up a champagne bar and I didn't want anything large or elaborate. I just wanted a nice little cozy spot that have these beautiful bottles that people could come in and taste by the glass if they want to order by the bottle. Because when you go to a lot of restaurants, champagne is not always an option by the glass.
No, now more than ever, but maybe not then.
Definitely not then.
Champagne's hot now.
Yeah, it's hot, but it's also
as far as the length of the list and the BTG options.
Yeah, and it's expensive by the glass.
Yeah,
you're going to start spending between $21 and $35, $40 a glass. Mm-hmm. I was out a couple of weeks ago, and I spent $40 for a glass.
Jesus.
And I had to make sure, hey, can you fill this up a little bit more? Because, when you tilt it, blah, 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 my bubbles reduce. So, I get technical with it. And that's what I wanted to do. I just wanted to have this little venue space where they can come in and say, hey, I want to try this by the glass. And maybe somebody, I could have introduced one person to champagne and they would say, well, maybe I'll come back every week to try a different glass of champagne and keep the actual menu rotating. So there's always something new. Or even for some of the bigger houses, introduce some of their vintages.
Sure. So a couple things. So the idea of this champagne bar, mm-hmm. which, you laid out a vision, preceded the idea of developing a brand?
So B. Stuyvesant was going to be the house brand of the bar.
So it kind of coincided?
B. Stuyvesant wasn't really meant to be retail at all. It was only supposed to be
like a house brand.
Yep, that's it. When you go to any bar, they have the house vodka, gin, whatever. So that's really what B. Stuyvesant was. It really what originally intentionally meant to be sold in Shore,
right.
sold online.
I get it now. Did any place give you inspiration, as a champagne bar in your travels in New York City, in Brooklyn? Like, hey, they do it well, let me kind of steal a few good ideas from, or you had your own vision.
I didn't really visit many champagne bars because there's not a lot of champagne bars. There's wine bars, and then you have some that have a couple of champagne options. But again, when they go to the bar, to the champagne selection, there's usually one or two glasses by the glass. I think, I visited this place back in the day, Flute. It's a champagne.
Up in the West 50s.
Yes.
The first one.
And there used to be one in the Flatiron. I think one of them
the
closed.
First one was West 50s, but that, yeah.
And I visited that when I was younger. I don't remember all the details about it, but back then I wasn't especially sold on champagne. But I remember them having an extensive menu. I don't remember if they offered by the glass. And what I wanted to do is 80% of the bottles we have to have an option by the glass.
Right. Which gives you that runway to introduce people. Mm-hmm. So we're up to a point where we see how everything's developing. I'm getting a feeling that the time we're running into is around COVID.
Oh, yes.
So I'm assuming, and you have to walk me through, COVID had a major effect on how things played out, what you're doing today, you know, all of that. So, boom, you have these ideas. Boom, COVID hits. You know, what's the sidetrack? Where are you at now? What did it do?
So pre-boom, let's go back one boom. I was already developing, B. Stuyvesant, our first two cuvées, which was only our Grand Reserve and our Rosé. I was already like some time in.
Do we have a Grand Reserve here?
We don't have a Grand Reserve.
Okay, what do we have?
We have B. Stuyvesant's Blanc de Blanc, 100% white grape
what
Chardonnay.
Are we drinking for the end of the show?
We're going to drink our Premier Cru to end
the show.
All right,
so open the other one. And
I don't want to touch the mic and I move anything. No, I'm just
don't worry about it.
He gave me specific instructions.
Don't worry. I said to you we should taste both of them. So I see you have a Coravin on. Do they work well with champagne?
Yes, these are actually...
I mean, nobody would know better than you. How many Coravin bottles have you
these
done?
These are one of the best champagne bubble preservers I've ever used. We used them in our tasting room.
So... if anyone doesn't know, Coravin is a device invented by a guy who you use the device to preserve wine and you stick a needle in the cork. It throws in argon gas, which displaces the oxygen and your wine doesn't, you know, do that. With champagne, how does this one work?
So this one actually works. You have to use their stoppers.
Right.
You put this on, you close this down like this. Sorry, I'm not really good with visuals. And we have the actual, it's in my other bag too far away. It's a stopper that goes on here. You have cartridges and you suck it up and it takes the air off the bottle to reserve.
So are the cartridges, the argon, the same as the wines?
It's a little bit different,
okay.
But yeah.
Okay, so there's not a lot of treatments for saving champagne and you're saying this works well.
This works well for up to 2 weeks. So
I was going to ask you, so 2 weeks is enough for tastings, you know, market trips and all that.
Or just invite me over and we can sip the bubbles.
Yeah. All right. So we sidetracked for a second because we always want to teach our listeners, you know, some options because people may think maybe I can't save a bottle of champagne. And if you're a big champagne drinker, this is a good idea. All right. So what were we talking about?
We're talking about leading up to the pandemic. So
right.
I already had inventory coming in. And I think a year and a half, 2 years before I actually launched, we did our first tasting at the Brooklyn Navy Yard where my headquarters is at now at Hip Hop Closet hosted us. The first tasting in we ever did in the United States. And what I did is I invited a couple of industry folks out. We set up different stations, blind stations, they didn't know what they were drinking, had cards on there where they can write their feedback. So if everybody
all felt, your stuff.
All B. Stuyvesant, okay. Yes. So that they can see, they can be honest with it. And that's what really helped me focus on which two I was really going to push for developments because we had tastings by the bottles. So that's what I worked with. And that's how we came to life. So I ended up getting my first set of inventory and a couple of people asked me for it, and I was like, oh, no, this thing is going to blow over. This thing of the pandemic thinking was going to blow over. Didn't blow over. Wasn't comfortable signing a lease or anything for a space for the champagne bar. And then I actually ended up putting it in stores, and I said, well, if it don't sell, it just don't sell, and I'll just take it back. That's what my mindset was. And graciously, we had our first store that picked it up was Happy Court in Brooklyn on Buffalo. And it actually did amazing. We had like a full news crew out. People were outside lined up. This was not my expectations. And it just took off from there. So I'm very happy.
What year was that?
2020, February 12th, 2020.
Oh, so right before the...
right before everything began to shut down.
The DD hit the fan, yeah.
In March, yeah. So I was very happy with the brand. And from there, we just started getting so much... you know, being recognized and, you know, recognized and questioned at the same time. You know, the good always comes with the bad.
Right. One of the interesting things I stumbled on is you built the business from the ground up and you self-funded it.
Yes, I did. So
I mean, if you could do it, it's the greatest. I mean, did you mortgage everything? Or
No, I just had a stash.
You did have a stash?
I had a stash.
And you said, I'm confident. I'm throwing it in there.
I did not have a business plan. I did not have everything perfectly laid out. I just knew I figured it out along the way. And I think that's what one of my great strengths is as a person is I'm probably not the most traditional person where I have to jot everything down to like A to B to C to D. I'm really good at being hands-on and just figuring it out. And because it was my money that I said, if I lose it, what's going to happen? I'm just going to have to move back home with my mother, be mentally drained for a little bit, you know, too grown to be moving back home. But I just believed in myself. And if I had to take a bet on anything or anybody, it might as well just be me. And I always tell myself, if you know, I still have a great education. I mean, a great education and a great career to fall back on.
Right, right. I mean, perfectly set up to succeed, not fail. But if it's funny, here's my question. How much of a business plan did you start with or did you wing a good deal of it?
A good deal.
You answered that. You know, because being in finance, master's, somewhat meticulous, it's funny how you approach certain things. But there's no game plan, you know, for that in that sense. So to this day, no outside investors?
No, to this day.
Is there any craving like to blow up distribution or product if I bring somebody in?
I said that I wanted to create the brand and then have it fully productive before I expand it out. And I think I've done a good job of it. I still have some tweaks to get out. You know, we're not a perfect business. We're a small business, small but efficient and mighty. There's things that happen at last minute where there's certain things I can't control. Like I still have to deal with import issues when sometimes things get stuck in customs. Those are like my delays. Those pull me away from day-to-day business. Staffing is a major issue in any industry. Working with that, we opened up our new space last June. So space is built out 85%. So still another 15% to get right with it.
This is the space in the Navy Yard in Brooklyn.
Yeah, this is the space. You have to stop by.
Yeah, I definitely want to. It's funny how the idea of a champagne bar really blossomed, you know, into a brand. I want to get into the brand and I want to get into, how you selected partners, you know, in France style and all that. Mm-hmm. But I just want to talk to you about a couple things. We discussed off air, and I'm going to bring it up again, that wine's not the most forgiving industry to women and people of color.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it sucks, and it was heavily exposed more during COVID
you know,
than ever before, how tough hospitality is and who it takes a toll on.
Do you mind if I take a sip of my bubbles?
Yeah, we're going to take a sip and talk about it. You know, any tough experiences? Were there experiences that were powerful enough that kind of stopped you to say, wait a second, you know? I mean, you don't seem like the type of person that's going to get pushed aside.
No, that's definitely not my personality. I had some comments that were made to me in the beginning. I've had, when I was deciding a venue to work with, one individual male was like, this is not your thing, you know, you're not French, you're this, so this will never go anywhere. So you're just wasting your time.
Was that veiled being a woman of color or just an outsider and both?
It was both. It was everything. Do what you're supposed to do, but this isn't it. I've had, when I first started to, you know, I was on the on an online thing at on a Zoom, like during the pandemic, and somebody had inboxed me something, and I still have that screenshot. And it wasn't a positive comment. Like, it said something to the effect of good idea, but it's not going to go anywhere. You know, just understand that you're a woman and you're this, and you have to be able to do this and this and this. Also, because of like, you don't have this large amount of funding, you're not going to go far. So I saved his screenshot and I shot him. I was Petty Betty for a minute and I shot him back a really good article. And I was like, we didn't go too far, but we made a cover the style check in the New York Times. So cheers.
Right. Zing to you. You know, Europe is no better. I mean, when you started figuring out, you know, partners and all that, same experiences, worse, same.
Yes. You know what? I've had some interesting experiences. you know, sometimes people don't take you seriously, or sometimes they want to attempt to dictate to you. Rule number one, don't ever try to dictate to me. That's like the worst thing you can ever do. And I didn't have to find a partner that I felt good with to work with as far as like partnering with the vineyard. And that probably was one of the hardest things. But once I got going, I got going. Because you think about it, when you're partnering with the vineyard, it's going to be producing your label. This is your business. You want to make sure that even if you guys disagree, you still know how to resolve the disagreement. You know, right?
That's a healthy relationship.
Come back to it, right? I don't want to be where I go back and forth in wars and stuff like that. Really didn't work for me. And my vineyard, who actually is woman-led, her and her brother lead it together, but she's the voice, the face. When we started communicating, started out as emails, you know, and I wasn't 100% focused or serious yet.
How do you find this person? Is it an intro? Do you make a list?
I was wandering around properties.
You were literally on the ground.
I was wandering on properties. Right. And I remember speaking to her, but I never like went into depth with her. But I remember having a conversation with her. And then I didn't go back when I said I was going to go back. I think I was hanging out in Paris, so I didn't go back. And again, wasn't fully focused.
How much time went by?
Oh, before I reached out to her again, probably like 4 months.
Oh, okay. Not forever, but...
I sent her an email. She responded. And then I wouldn't respond for 2 weeks because I was working. And I remember I was like gunning for promotion. So I had cut the outside world out. Same question. I would go back to, I would ask her the same questions like 3 times. And she never got mad. She never was like sarcastic. She would just answer everything. And then I'm like, this lady's patient, because I would have been told me like, let's prior to email I sent on such and such date. So we were just going back and forth, and then I started, you know, focusing in, and I really enjoyed her conversation. So then we started talking on the phone, we started doing FaceTime, and we started doing Zoom, and we started getting better than the visits started, and I enjoyed working with her, and I still do, and the family's amazing. I visit the vineyard frequently, quarterly, sometimes more than one time in a quarter, and it's just like we all mesh well together.
So... you found the right partner, same person to this day, right?
Yes.
So we'll get into where they are and what they're doing in a minute. Let me just finish up on a few thoughts. So you work through the fact that people are dismissive. I mean, just nobody, it just shows you that people, like the story you told about the guy that you sent him, you know, a snap or something. Is that a guy in the industry?
He is in the industry. I don't know.
I mean, where's like the nurturing or the camaraderie?
And then there's that side. But there's, and I feel like I have more positivity from you. It's only like splotches of negativity. But you can also know when people are talking to you, what they think, or like, well, how did you get into this? Like, I had a woman in my actual tasting room where, one, she was so combative, like, to tell me, like, champagne can be made anywhere. I'm like, no, it can't be. And then
she had no idea.
No idea. And then when her friends were explaining, she looked at me and was like, well, how did you get into this? And I'm just like, well, thank you.
Next. Do you feel you're making an impact in changing the champagne community a little, the wine community? I mean, I can answer that and say yes, little by little. But do you feel that?
I think we are our toughest critics. So I feel like I have a long way to go. I feel like I've introduced this brand to consumers as a Black woman that's not French. That's what I've done.
Well, that's not a French accent?
No, it's not a French accent. Okay. I have one, but it's really bad, so we won't be doing it.
Right. So, you know, a woman of color introduces the brand.
I just feel like my journey is unconventional. And sometimes I still have a hard time believing, like, I did do this. And I don't look at myself as a role model or anything. Though people, I get emails all the time. People look up to me. They have kind words to say, which I love. I just look at as a person that had a dream and follow her dream.
Well, that's the role model part. You know, the fact that you had the idea, you persisted. We talked a few minutes ago. I mean, you did have a business plan, but you didn't have a 10-page line by line. You knew what you wanted to do.
Yes,
you winged it
head.
A little, you know. So, I mean, that's a good story for anybody. Do you feel that you're always going to be tested? Because you're a woman of color, you're in a European, you know, product, or... you don't care and you've gone past that.
I feel like I will always be tested, specifically because Beast Iverson is a smaller bespoke product and brand, period. Because instantly, when I do taste things, I always get this for the person, well, why should I buy this over X and X, over a larger house?
But you can get that anywhere for anything.
Yeah, that's what
But they're busting you because it's you more. Right. Yeah.
Or they ask all these detailed questions to make sure I know what I know so I don't sound like I'm shooting bees.
You're held to...
Yeah. Now, the question is, do I care? The answer is no.
Otherwise, you get yourself sick.
Like, I don't care.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing to hear. So you manage that, which, you know, is a good thing. All right. We're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
But before we take a quick break, we have... one of your champagnes in front of us.
Yes.
So I want you to take a minute and walk me through it, and then we're going to do a little sight taste evaluation. This is the Beast Stuyvesant
Blanc de Blancs. Okay. So this is 100% white grape. It's aged 24 months. It's light, it's crisp. It's not overly dry. It has a light golden hue to it. Compared to the other cuvées, whether it's a reserve or the premier cru, and we can do this later, you'll see that the... Blanc de Blanc is the lightest of all shades.
But you know what? It's a nice golden hue. It's not a super light golden hue.
It is. It's not. But once we compare the layers, you'll see. Yeah. Our Blanc de Blanc pairs best well with seafood. I'm a big seafood eater. So like clams, oysters, shrimp. I love this with shrimp cocktail. Love it with shrimp cocktail.
Does it go well with any sauce, like a red sauce? Or
more like a buttercream sauce it goes well with. Okay. Yes. I would say...
Because you have to pair to the sauce also.
When you have a cream sauce with seafood, you need something a little bit heartier. You need to use the rosé.
Right. So the color is this beautiful golden. What do you get on the nose?
So for me, I have like small hints of like faint pears.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a little bit of apricots, but not too much. Very faint. You smell it.
Yeah.
But everybody's nose is a little bit different.
It's not bready or biscuity. Mm-mm. It's fresh.
It's crisp.
It's got fine little bubbles. It's not this big overly bubble thing. Let's open the mouth and throw it over the tongue and tell me if the palate resembles the nose, like some of those apricots or pears, or what else do you get?
You still get the hints of the pears.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get it more in the front of your palate.
Front and mid.
Yeah, going down to the back, it mellows out. You have like a velvety texture in your mouth.
It has a nice mouthfeel to it. All right, so just tell me again what that was. That's the Blanc.
That was the Blanc de Blancs.
All right, so we're going to taste, what are we tasting at the end of the show?
Our Premier Cru.
So we're going to taste the Premier Cru, and we'll even do a little side-by-side. We're talking to Marvina Robinson. Marvina is the proprietor of B. Stuyvesant Champagne. When we come back, we're going to talk to Marvina about the actual champagnes, the brand, get into it a little, you know, what she's doing in France. So you're listening to The Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio Network. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Cheese State University. Cheese State University was created for dedicated cheese professionals seeking to deepen their knowledge, sharpen their skills, and build connections.
It feels like a gift to be able to give this gift to people because I know that from my own experiences, I know how valuable, consolidated, incredible training resources are.
They offer an in-depth education on all things cheese, as well as an active network for peer support and career development.
You can pop over to the Quad, which is our social networking and engagement app. And so that's a really fun and dynamic aspect of Cheese State University.
Cheese State's three-part course is designed for seasoned pros and entry-level mongers alike and covers all the skills one needs to perform on the cheese counter.
The structure of Cheese State University is all based on the Cheese State University Field Guide. And that is a three-volume resource. It's all digital, online.
At the end of the course, students will be ready to ace the field guide assessment and earn their Cheese State Scholar Certificate.
Another resource is a video series where we tackle sort of like these thornier questions that you can get on the cheese counter, like, what is rennet? And like, why is this cheese so expensive? And can pregnant people even eat cheese?
At Cheese State, you're among experts, you're among scholars, you're among cheese lovers, and most importantly, you are a monger. Join them in the Ivy League of cheese education at cheesestateuniversity.com.
All right, we're back. We're back with my guest, Marvina Robinson. Marvina is the Brooklyn Queen of Champagne. I just made that.
I like that.
It's not bad.
That's good. I'm going to get a t-shirt with that.
That's not bad. But you're even better than that. Marvina has launched her own brand of champagne. And when we talked about this off air too, when I came across this story, I'm not sure if it was your Instagram or one of the stories that covered you, you know, I delve into it and I said, this is just a great story. I mean, this is a Grape Nation story. It's got all the elements of everything I love. All right, so let's now talk about your Beast Stuyvesant Champagne.
Yay!
We talked about how you found your partner. Mm-hmm. You know, this woman, kind of a grower and all of that. How many different producers did you talk to?
Oh, talk to?
And taste and all of that. And were you turned away or people didn't get back to you? Or you said no because you didn't like the stuff?
I talked to a couple about like probably like 10 to 12.
And, okay.
Some I just felt it wasn't a match based off of personality, right? Like I said earlier, it's like being in a relationship.
You got to live with this person.
Exactly. So it's about like, you have to mesh with people. Just like when you walk in, like when I walked in here, I see I can mesh with you. You're cool. Okay. You know, jury's still out though.
Oh, wait till we get to the picture thing. The jury will be gone. No, don't go there. All right. So yeah, it's more about, you know, partnership, which is what you have to live with. But tell me about this. So while you're doing this, that's an important thing that's overriding.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I got to work with this. Mostly men, women, split?
Mostly men.
Okay. When you started walking around to these people, did you have a profile or a style? Did you know that, you know, there are some people that just do Blanc de Blanc. There's some people that just do Meunier. Did you articulate to these people?
No, yes and no. I said, my pitch was, and I did not have anything written out. I was like, hey, my name is Marvina. I'm a true, you know, champagne enthusiast, you know, giving them some of my background, let them know that I do know about the industry. And I was like, I want to create a private label. So obviously I know I want it to be champagne. So it's to come from the Champagne region. I am looking to produce, well, initially I was like, I'm looking to produce, you know, two signature cuvées. Obviously one is a rosé and then I want to work with a traditional brut.
So that sense you had, you wanted to get out of the chute with those two at least.
Yes, because I felt, again, remember, this was supposed to be the house brand of the champagne bar. So remember that part. And that's what I was really focused on because this started way before COVID. I just launched in COVID because I'm like, I'm not going to sit on this inventory. We're just going to deal with it. So we started with that. And I wasn't interested in the Blanc de Blanc at first. And I was like, I just want a traditional brut. I want a rosé because, you know, those are the two most common that I thought was common at the time. So
right.
Let's say that.
Right.
Because now I'm more experienced, more in depth. I'm all over the place with my palate. Fun fact about me is I don't bring Beast Stuyvesant home.
What does that mean?
I try different champagnes almost every weekend. Again, not to sound like an AA, but I like to keep my palate fresh. I like to be an SME when it comes.
So you're tasting everything to get inspiration, see what people are doing.
Inspiration, how it works. And then when people come to me for suggestions or recommendations, because I feel like, I want
go
to
beyond
be,
your
to be
house
SME.
Too. Yeah.
Yes, I want to be an SME. Yeah. I am an SME of champagne, so I want to be able to give great recommendations. And I don't want to always recommend Beast Stuyvesant. Like, we could do a tasting with Blanc de Blanc, and I can give you four different Blanc de Blancs I want to taste along with Beast Stuyvesant. So you can see how, side by side, what the different tastes like. Because, again, every house has their own recipe.
Right.
So you want to begin to see what meshes with your palate.
So stop there for a second. You talked about opening a champagne bar.
Mm-hmm.
That's done. You now have an office with an event and tasting space.
I didn't say it was done.
Okay.
I didn't say it was done.
Okay, so that could happen, but you do have
that is going to happen.
Okay, so I love hearing that. And you do have a space where you can, you know, highlight tastings and events at the office.
Yep, we have a...
So for now, you know, you could do all of that.
So we have a 2,000 square foot tasting room. That's our headquarters and tasting room combined. So our space is really functional. I'm glad.
If I'm a corporate guy, can I do like a thing there?
Yep.
You know, like a morale builder, a tasting, a little party, all that stuff you could do?
We do all of that. We've housed different corporate events. We've housed more intimate tastings. We've even bring in a chef and we have an intimate full dinner with each course paired with champagne and the chef cooks on premises.
Nice. So there's that. And stay tuned for... maybe a champagne bar. All right. So the champagne, we've said this five times, but champagne can't be champagne unless it's produced in Champagne. That's why Marvina kept going back and forth. And you don't even talk about it while you were working. I mean, you literally left like on a Friday or Saturday morning and came back Sunday. So it wouldn't interfere.
I actually would leave on a Friday evening. I would catch the express bus from Vanderbilt and 46th Street across from Grand Central. I would catch that 4 o'clock bus.
To the airport?
To the airport. I would catch the 6:40 flight. Used to fly Delta. Get me in at like 6 something in the morning. At that time, I wouldn't check any baggage, so I wouldn't waste any time to get to my hotel. Get to my hotel. Early check-in.
Hit
shower,
the ground.
Change. Get something to eat. Get over to Gardelist, and I would take the train out to the region. And then I would do the same thing again. And I would get in Monday morning. And before I joined Equinox just for the fact so I can shower.
Right. They have right the before, best locker
right,
room.
Yes. Right yeah. there. And then my office was right across the street.
So you were hustling your butt off.
I was hustling.
All right. So you made these trips to Champagne. You wound up in Epernay, which is a region of Champagne, specifically in the Marne Valley.
Mm-hmm.
This is where that woman producer is.
Yes. The family, yes. But she.
Let's talk about... what's there? I mean, my understanding is they have different plots, 6 different plots.
Mm-hmm.
Does that offer you different exposures, soils?
Yeah. So you think, so for us, we produce mainly with Chardonnay.
The 3 champagne
Meunier
blending grapes.
And Pinot Noir. And that's where the plots go across, right?
But that valley... is really known for Pinot Meunier too.
Depending on what side of the valley, because also remember, the soil.
Okay, so you have your exposure and access
yes.
to the 3 great grapes.
Exactly.
And like
yes.
we just drank a Blanc de Blanc.
Yes, and we
Chardonnay.
Have access also to like a Premier Cru plot as well. So yes, we have access to all.
Was that one of the attractions of why this would be a good partner?
No. I wasn't even thinking about that. Because remember, when I first started, I wasn't really...
It
expanding.
Was a match with the right
yeah,
person.
Yeah, I just wanted 2
with.
Cuvées. For
but
my...
isn't that fortuitous? It worked out that way?
That's exactly because
okay.
I wasn't thinking about having a Blanc de Blanc, a Premier Cru to the level we are today. I was more interested in, hey, I want to be able to produce these. I want different size bottles for these 2 cuvées. And the brand expanded, you know, even though COVID was a monster, it came as a blessing to me because it kind of, giving me insight on how my business transformed to where it's at today.
It gave you that pause or something.
Yeah, because I have to, even though we may want A, circumstances say, nah, you're going to get G. And G is what's working for me. G opened my mindset to see what I need to do. It forced me to pivot. And that's what's important. As an entrepreneur, you have to be able to pivot under circumstances. You can't just say, hey, I'm stuck with A, B, and C. If I would have went off of my business plan, I would have deviated already, or my business plan would have been null and void.
I think that's what it's all about. What I'm curious about, and it shouldn't sound like a mean question or whatever, but isn't it obvious how little you knew going in compared to what you knew now and what was available?
Oh,
you know, as far as grapes, blending, regions, soils. I mean, you're good at that now. That first pass.
I thought I knew a lot going in.
Right, because you said you read and educated. And
but
embedded.
Now, like for me, I'm very hands-on. I do visit the region a lot. Like I love my vineyard. It's great. I also visit other vineyards because I just like to know different things. And it's just so enlightening about the whole champagne industry. And sometimes people think that you get so much from a reading knowledge. You don't get the true experience. Right. You have to immerse yourself in the culture, be there and understanding what goes on. Because just like when there was like global warming affects the actual crops, you know? So guess what? Harvest season varies.
Planting, picking.
Exactly.
All that.
If there's ripening, frost, you know, within the crops.
Which has been an issue.
Yes, you got to manually heat it up. So, and that also goes behind to the cost of champagne. Like all of these adds up why champagne is more expensive than a Prosecco or anything else related to sparkling. It's a very manual, intense wine to create. So hence the price point behind it.
Yeah, we're not going to get into how it's made, but it is very, the riddling.
Yeah,
you know, the second fermentation, you know, blowing the frozen cap out. It's crazy, you know, what's going on there. All right, so let's talk about the different bottlings. You make 6 or 7 different champagnes, more or less.
We have a portfolio of 8 right now.
Okay.
And we have 3
more. Are 8 available all the time, or that depends?
No, so there's 2 limited editions, which is our heritage, which everybody has been asking for to come back, and it's coming.
So that was limited in the bottle. Why did you limit it?
Because I didn't. You want to know honestly why?
Yeah,
because
it goes. That's why I asked.
It goes to financing. You know, like, do I want to put everything here to produce year round?
I got it.
So
you
for me,
pick your spots.
I take heritage and our prestige rosé. Or our limited edition bottles.
What's limited to you? Like, are you making a couple hundred cases, less,
so,
more?
No. We produce our prestige rosé. We max out at 800 a year versus all the others are like 3 times that.
800 cases?
800 bottles.
Bottles.
For
oh.
the prestige rosé.
So it's really a small
so
limited
it's
run.
It's a, because you think about it, for me, we have a portfolio of 8. Everything doesn't, in my opinion, or how I decide, everything does need to be fully year round. Certain people, like we have a traditional rosé, which is year round, a prestige rosé.
Is that one of the main champagnes in the lineup? That
our rosé? Traditional rosé, yes.
Right.
Our prestige rosé, consumers love it. When it's like right now, we're sold out and we're sold out earlier than I anticipated. So not for 2024, but going to 2025, we've already increased production for the prestige rosé.
Okay, and then what's the other?
Heritage, it's actually one of our other Barutes. That's actually 80% Meunier grape and a 20% Pinot Noir. That
no Chard?
No Chardonnay.
Wow.
And that actually...
What's the profile there? Is it rich? Color a little darker?
Color is definitely a little darker. It's aged for 36 months. So it's actually...
Aged longer?
Yeah.
Sounds beautiful.
Our reserve is compared to our heritage. The heritage just has a different, slightly different tasting profile. 80% for the reserve is also heavy on the Meunier grape, which is why we don't have both of them year round. So I chose the heritage to be the ones that dip in and dip out.
Right.
So we didn't actually really produce it for 2022, but for 2023, for the holiday season, it will be back in.
Did you always envision multiple cuvées so that the line could appeal to a broad taste?
Initially,
group.
No. But when I realized this is the business, I knew yes. Because for a B. Stuyvesant to be an actual champagne company, in my opinion, I want to be able to appeal to numerous palates, right? Rosé, you want to have, we have reserve as our traditional go-tos. But for example, if you want to get more intricate, we're going to come to the Blanc de Blanc so that we can pair with seafood. We're going to come to our Premier Cruise. We're going to come to our demi-sec. Though I'm not a sweet drinker, you still have to have like a demi-sec for those who want to enjoy champagne but have a little bit more dosage on it. All of that is what comes into play for that. So I wanted to be able to produce a full portfolio. We have 3 cuvées waiting to come into the portfolio for 2023-24. And that's where I actually get like my vision on. We also produce different bottle sizes, where we produce half bottles, full-size standard bottles, we produce magnums, we produce Gerald bombs. So all that's important because all of that comes into play to the different potential clients
right.
/ consumer, yeah.
Right. For a small company, it's a smart move. you know, to appeal to everyone. Tell me a couple things about farming and winemaking. Your Champagne partner owns their property, right?
It is a more like an 8-year generational house. So it's been in the family for years.
The place you have your champagne?
Yes. Okay. My vineyard, yes.
And the family makes the wine?
Yes. So everything is, so it's growers house. The grapes are on, their property. They own a process from front to end. Only time any outside people are boarding is during harvest season.
Okay.
Where they bring in pickers to come in to help, right, pick, because you know you only have a short time. And there's only one head winemaker in the house, which is our a family member of the house. And that's it. It's closed circuit. Year round.
Do you interact as far as direction and style? And I mean, you put a lot of faith into this person, but you do input?
We were already discussed our tasting profiles. He's the expert, right? Okay. But what I do like about him is that we talk in depth. When I'm there, we sit, we taste, we sit what to look for. So that's very important for me. So it's a very hands-on approach.
Nice.
I try to be as hands-on as possible. I'm not the person where, I'm hands-off. I want to be in the crops, in the fields. We need help pushing bottles around. We need help stacking. We need help when we get... So now riddling isn't done by hand. It's done by a major machine now.
Right.
Let's get that done. Do we need help packing these boxes? I'm all over the place.
What about things like sustainability? As far as taking sustainability, you know, as the next step. Mm-hmm. I mean, are they farming thoughtfully?
Oh, 100%.
Are they farming? Are they winemaking thoughtfully? They're not intervening? So you know, talk me through that.
Everything is 100%. So there's no pesticides used on
nice.
The crops. We talked about going organic, but that's a whole nother process. We're not ready for that stage yet.
But you practice a lot of it, but you're not certified or there
we're
yet.
We're not certified there. So there's no pesticides. There's no animals or anything on there. We're limiting. We don't use any styrofoam on properties.
Okay.
So we're just getting better in that.
Is that important to you?
It is important to me because it affects our overall industry and overall liveliness. So all of that is important. I'm a person, I don't eat beef or pork. So I don't want to make sure that certain animals are not included in the process. So one of the things when I first started out, people was like, is this vegan? Is this organic? So I can't officially label it as vegan. I put vegan friendly because to be a vegan product, it has to be registered within the states. And between U.S. and France, there's different...
But is there no vegan...
There's no...
I mean, it's vegan. It's just not... Listen, there are a lot of practitioners that don't have the certification because they can't afford it or it's too much of a process or they don't give a crap.
It is a huge process, but there's no animals or anything included in that process. So that's why we label it as vegan friendly. Because legally, you have to be registered through the vegan overall.
Right.
We haven't gone through that process, so I just withstand that, and I just make sure I put vegan friendly. And I explain very detailed process.
Right. You're not in the minority in practicing it that way.
Oh, yes, exactly.
There are people who practice the right things but don't necessarily get themselves certified. Are there any other things you want to add to the lineup? We talked about up to 8 different, you know.
We have 3 new cuvées coming in.
3 on top of the 8?
Yes, 3 on top of the 8. Remember, 2 was still...
Limited edition.
Yeah. We have another one where it's ready. I just have to finish some things on my end. It will probably be a limited edition. Well, it will be one of our top sellers. What I like to add on... this past holiday season, the first time we did 187s, though we will not produce 187s year
round. What is that, like a split?
The split, the most small ones. 187s are very expensive to make. So we used it for a holiday, but we're going to do it one more time, where for this holiday season, it'll be with the rosé. And probably we did the Blanc de Blanc. We're one of the few houses to have a Blanc de Blanc in a 187 split.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
That we have some things on the U.S. states where we're implementing some visuals in our office so that people can come in to try something new.
Nice.
Working on some meta items to put us in the 3D world. that probably will take me into 2025 to complete, but we're starting it. So those are little things. I try to be more innovative and create an experience for consumers because champagne is patented. So when people come or consumers come to taste Bee Stuyvesant, I want them to get the full experience of Bee Stuyvesant, but also introduce them to another concept or something that they haven't been exposed to
right.
to get a full 360 experience.
So to that point, I want you to sort of evangelize. I want you to tell people why they shouldn't just drink and perceive champagne as celebratory. Why it's just such a great, you know, you and I call it wine too. Mm-hmm. Why it's just such a great wine beyond what people box it in as.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, to clear up the mythologies, champagne is a wine. It's just a type of wine, right?
Yeah. It's made with wine.
Exactly, right? It starts off as a still process, and then you during the second fermentation comes into the sparkling aspect. So, and I agree with you 100%. Champagne is just not meant for celebratory. Champagne can be enjoyed with every portion of your meal, whether you're starting with an appetizer, a salad, full entree,
so
down to dinner.
So it's uber food friendly.
It's uber food friendly.
That's number one.
It's uber food friendly. I think people get confused with the bubbles or say, oh, it's going to give me a headache. Sometimes it just might be psychological, or maybe you didn't find the right champagne for you or for your body or style. Dosage, which is sugar, plays a part in role of it. You know, you have a brut, then you have an extra brut.
Right,
extra,
you can
extra
buy ones that you just have a higher sugar if you like sweet, or if not, lower.
A less one. You just have to find different cuvées that work for you. And sometimes it's more about reading the actual tasting profiles, but also remember, everybody's palate is unique and different. Or you can start off with one house and maybe go through their portfolio from the different selections they have and then see what you like from there. And then from there, say, hey, I like this one. So when you go out to shop different champagnes, these are the tasting profile I like. What can you recommend for me?
Bingo. If you know what you want and you can articulate it and you have a good like wine shop where the guy curates, guy or woman, then... Oh, man, look at this wall.
Exactly.
You know, you want sweeter, less sweeter and all that. Yeah, I think people, I tell this over and over on the show. I've been collecting wine for years, so all my friends defer to me when we go out.
Oh, nice.
I won't let them bring wine because I don't want to drink crappy wine. So I always used to bring a white and a red.
Mm-hmm.
Now, basically, I bring a champagne and a red. And people go, why'd you bring champagne?
Because.
And then at the end, they're like, this is awesome.
Now champagne is always the answer for everything.
Now I have friends that, you know, they do the same thing. I've asked this question before, too. Best temperature, best glasses.
Tulip-shaped glasses.
Tulip, not flutes?
No, flutes is Spanx for champagne.
Yes. You want more of an open explain.
You need to open it.
Why?
You need your wine to open because bubbles actually have a tasting profile in them. It has aroma, taste. So you want the wine to open up fully. With the flutes, it's going to be very slender. So you need it to open up a little bit and then tape over the top so it doesn't get flat or go cold too fast. Average 45 to 47 degrees is the best temperature
for
champagne.
That's coolish.
Yes.
45. So you're more on the coolish
book. Yes.
I don't mind, you know, room temperature because I think the flavors come out, but that's not a popular thing.
Well,
people will say, oh, this is warm.
What happens is, so for me, I love my first sip to be crisp, but I'm not gulping. So as soon as you open up the bottle or pour it out, it's automatically going to heat up. So by time, like if I'm talking and sipping sometime 15 minutes, it might be too hot for me. So that's why I go a little bit cooler because as soon as you open up, it's going to automatically warm up.
I like that. So please, people, get that old champagne flute notion
right
out of your head.
Or drink out of a traditional white wine glass.
Yeah, which is fine, you know. All right, we do a thing called the wine list where I ask my guests five questions.
Uh-oh.
Same five questions to everyone.
I should have listened to a show before.
You should have. Be spontaneous. And answer them best as you can.
Okay.
First question. What are you drinking now?
In my house.
What's in your fridge?
In my fridge is nothing but water, water and a bottle of sparkling water. Now, what's in my wine fridge?
Yeah, but you said you're tasting other champagnes.
Oh, yes. I have, ooh-wee.
But are you tasting, you kind of talk through that. Are you tasting other things?
Yeah, I'm tasting a lot.
Are like, there wines, they're just, beers?
No, so I don't, oh, so here's a fun fact. I don't drink liquor, period. I do not drink beer. I it's very rare you catch me with a still wine. So I have, in my wine fridge, I have 98% champagne. I probably have two or three still wines. I have this bottle of wine, red wine. It's valued at like $600. It was a gift.
What is it?
I don't know. I don't drink. It's a red wine from Burgundy.
You're a champagne drinker.
Yeah, so I have it out of respect. Two bottles that were given to me. One I purchased a mile back where I'm trying to get into, but I haven't mastered it yet.
It's and a big wine a mile back.
It is. So I
go from champagne to Malbec. It's like, woo.
I have to take my time with that. I have a lot. So I have my go-to favorites. Marc Habart is one of my favorites.
H-E-B-R-A-R-T?
Yes, yes, okay. Yes.
So that's one of your faves. Give me one or two more.
Billy Cart's one of my favorites.
Okay.
I have another favorite brand, but I cannot remember the brand. I just went blank. But I also like Louis Roederer, but the Premier Cru, not the 242 or the 243. Okay. Those are all in my
fridge. Those are relatively new, though.
Yeah. And then I had another brand last night. I think it's
those are good ones.
Gonet.
Pierre Gonet.
Yes.
G-O-N-E-T.
Yes, yes, yes. I was actually Googling it this morning.
Very good grower producer.
I was trying to find some other bottles.
All right. So I didn't mention this, but we post your answers because people love to hear, okay, you know, what you're drinking.
And then I got B. Stuyvesant, of course.
Of course. Well, we know that. Second question, favorite wine and food pairing. What you like. Oh, not what's perfect.
No. I already know what I like. I love a charbroiled oyster.
Okay.
And give me a Blanc de Blanc.
Like on a grill,
charbroil? On a grill, yes. I just came back from Charleston Fooling Wine.
Do you put anything on the oyster?
Whatever. I don't cook it myself. I've had it, and sometimes there's different bread stuffings.
Okay.
Different, whatever it is.
But a grilled oyster with Blanc de Blanc.
Char grilled, yes. It has to be char grilled. I don't want anything with no gas grills, char grilled.
Right. You pick up a little of that smoke.
Yes, it has the smokiness to it.
All right. We have three more questions, but we're going to deviate for a moment. The deviation is, if we can knock it out quickly, five of the best or greatest foods to eat with champagne.
Fried chicken.
So that's one of my faves.
Mm-hmm.
One.
Fried chicken, French fries.
Two.
What else I love? Anything. I love a pasta truffle.
Pasta with truffle.
Yes. And then naturally pizza goes well.
Pizza's awesome. Give me one more. Give me
shrimp cocktail.
Shrimp cocktail, yes. Like you said, mm-hmm, with not a red sauce.
No, shrimp cocktail just straight. The shrimp cocktail with the sauce, lemons, with the, if it's a pasta dish with a truffle, if it's heavy cream, you got to go with the rosé with it.
There you go. All right. Favorite wine restaurant and or bar? We might as well stay local, Brooklyn, New York City, or, you know, any place that impresses you. And let's focus towards champagne. You walk into a place, they have a list. We talked about how important buy the glass is, the vibe of a place, the people that are knowledgeable, the list. Who's doing that?
So I have, there's two places I like. Two is one I remember, but let me get it right. So take a swig. Let me.
If you describe the one you don't know, I could probably guess.
No, one is actually not in New York, but I still have to give it its props because I enjoy myself.
Is it in France or?
No, it's actually in. Charleston, South Carolina. I just came back from there. So
Graft.
No.
Tippling House?
There it is. So Graff and Tippling House, they both have excellent options for champagne. So I went to Tippling House. We, on our first night of the overnight of Charleston, they had the Rosé Marc Habart, and I was just drawn to it.
So that's Matthew Conway, who was a New York GM and sommelier.
Yes.
Big champagne fan, mm-hmm, big Rhone fan. Went down there during COVID, never left, and opened his dream wine bar.
And it's amazing.
Femio has Graft, yes, open before Matthew.
Femi, yes.
And stuff on the wall. You, mm-hmm, buy it and just pay a little uptick and drink it at the bar.
Yep, great. We were there.
Great champagne.
Yeah, Femi and I, we met last year in 2022. And Matthew in 2022. So last year I didn't go to Tippling. This year I did. And we had an amazing, amazing night. So those are my first two. Here in New York.
Those are great ones.
Yeah, here in New York. So there's not a lot of restaurant bars that actually have like
or champagne. Bar bars or.
So it's a restaurant, Evelina's, which is actually on DeKalb Avenue.
Wow, that's a new one. Yeah. See, that's why I do this. I like Evelina's. E-V-E-L-I-N-A-S.
Yeah, I hope that's the right name.
On DeKalb. I'll fact check that.
Yeah.
What's good about it?
They have a good sparkling option.
Okay.
They have a good...
Beyond champagne? Sparklers?
So they have a good Prosecco on their menu, but they also have Billy Cart.
Ah, you love that.
Billy Cart Brut on their menu. So those are the two I like.
Those are good.
Who else do I normally go around to? So for me, it really depends on your menu. So I'm picky when I go out because I like to make sure if I'm out, the rare times I come out, that there's something for me to drink on the menu. So I look at the actual menus, or if they have a corkage fee, I'll pay the corkage fee to bring a bottle.
Great. All right. That's our third question. Fourth question is favorite all-time wine. When I originally structured the question, I wanted to find out the rarest, most expensive wine Marvina drank in her, you know, travels. I don't care about that anymore.
Okay.
What I care about is, what's that wine, and it's probably a champagne, that had the biggest effect on you? Was a gateway, opened up, you know, the way you think about it, affected, you know, just how you move forward, you know, had that impact on you? What's that? It could be one or two.
What's the brand, or what's the effect for me, or what's the...
What's the wine? Who was it? And
what
then we'll talk about
it. Was it for me?
Like people say, you know, I had a Burgundy because I never had Burgundy.
Well, one is a champagne, number one.
Okay. Do you remember which? When?
It's a story behind this one. So I was, I just discovered the champagne last year. I was driving, coming in from Jersey, and for whatever reason, my car, her name is Wilma, had an issue or had an attitude, and she broke down, right? For some reason, so I was stuck on the side of the turnpike. I pulled into the gas station. So I called a tow truck, and I'm like, all right, well, let me just walk around. So there's a wine shop. It's a liquor store over there. So I walked in there, and I went, and I said, let me just get some bottles. So I went and bought this half a bottle of champagne. And I went back to my car, put my key in, and the car started right away.
Ah.
So I'm like, what in the hootenanny? So then I go home, and I waited a week to drink the champagne. And when I tasted it, I was like, holy bleep, 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 bleep. It was so good.
What was it?
I cannot. That's the wine that's drawing the blank on. I think I have it in my phone.
All right, so if you don't answer it now, you and I will talk off air, and yeah. I will post it. But if the car didn't start, were you going to crack that? And drink it sitting in the car? You don't know? It's not kind of not legal.
I had a cold one and I had a hot one. So
okay.
I was going to like...
All right, so that's a
I think Wilma broke down because she wanted me to figure out the champagne. And then here's
she steered you to champagne.
Yeah. So then the fun fact is when I went back to France, I went to find the champagne there. I visited their vineyard and I learned about it. And then I would say this one, Canard Duchesne 2014 vintage. Definitely.
Wait, we got to spell this out. C-A-N-A-R-D, Canard?
Yep, Canard.
D-U-C-H-E-N-E,
2014 vintage.
Okay, Duchesne.
Yes.
Duchesne. And Duchesne. What is that?
Their vintage. It was amazing. So I visited, I did a...
Wait, is that champagne?
It's champagne, okay. Yeah. So that, I did a master champagne class with him, oh my gosh, probably in 2014. It came to New York, and that's when I was opening the champagne bar, and they invited me, and they like... Now, this is an experience that opened my eyes because we went through his whole portfolio. It was just beautiful. And
nice.
It was amazing. And then they invited me to their vineyard when I got to France. I went there one-on-one tour, toured their whole property. And then that's when I learned how to sevrage actual bottle.
Did you get it on the first strike?
No, I got it on the second strike.
Okay, that's pretty good.
But now I get it on the first strike. And we went through the tastings, and I fell in love with the 2014 vintage. And I just went back there last year. Late
so
year.
That's memorable to you.
Very memorable.
That's the answer to the question. Yeah. So we'll post those two. Final question. And I ask everyone this, and this may be the toughest.
Uh-oh.
I'm looking for you to recommend the best wines around $15, $20, $22. I'm looking for a red and a white. If you want to stay within the sparkling world, you could throw in sparklers. It's funny how there's some great sparklers in that price range, and people very rarely answer that question with that.
There is a really good Prosecco. It's probably one of the...
So let's start with Prosecco.
It's the top of the line, and I know the bottle is probably about 15. So I am going to Google this.
All right, so that's white.
Yes.
If you had to give me
You know what's a red sparkler? Bedvine Sparkling Lambrusco. I love it.
Bedvine?
Bedvine is actually a store...
In Bed-Stuy?
In Bed-Stuy on Tompkins.
They have a housemaid?
They have a housemaid.
Bedvine Lambrusco.
Yes.
So I'm going to go two ways with that. I love the fact that you recommended that. I love the fact that a local guy's making it. But I love Lambrusco as a great value red.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a sparkler.
It's good. And it's very rare that I drink, drink something outside of that. So Cafurlan, Cafurlan, is one of my...
That's the Prosecco?
Yeah, that's the Prosecco. And it's only $12.
Man, you nailed it on that. Okay, so it's two words, Cafurlan. I got it. I'm going to post that, like I said. All right, so that is Marvina's wine list. Five questions, great answers. Knocked it out of the park. My compliments to you. Mm-hmm. For somebody who didn't listen to the feature in advance. All right.
That's the good thing. So this
I love that. It's more spontaneous. So you know, it puts you on the edge of your seat.
So here's one. I don't fully prepare for interviews because I feel like I just speak my truth because that's all it is. I'm just living my truth.
So the story about you is the story.
Exactly.
And it's you.
Yes.
So however, you may do a similar interview and other things may come up mm-hmm. or you may add a perspective. That's great. But it's always going to point to the same thing.
Exactly.
Your passion, how you got there, all that
Everybody
stuff.
Has a different perspective. All
right. We end the show every week with a feature called the Weekly Wine Sip. Perfect mm-hmm. opportunity for a winemaker to bring in their wine and talk about it. We actually did a sneak peek of it by tasting the Blanc de Blanc.
Mm-hmm.
So this week we're going to taste what? And then tell me a little about it.
We're going to taste the Premier Cru.
Come on, let's get it going.
Premier Cru is a little bit opposite of the Blanc de Blancs.
Okay, what's the blend?
So it's a traditional blend of all three grapes. So okay. It's on Pinot Noir, Chardonnay.
Do you know the percentage?
Yep. So it's actually, oops.
All right.
Okay, cool. So it's actually 50% Pinot Noir, 40% Pinot.
Meunier?
No, Chardonnay, and then 10%.
Oh, it's a fairly traditional blend. Be careful. Oops.
These chairs are low.
I know, and they have arms.
Now, what I love about the Premier Cru, like my favorite apple is Granny Smith apples. So you definitely get a tasting and an aroma of Granny Smith.
You could differentiate of all apples, Granny Smith, and it's in here?
Yes.
On the nose and the palate?
Nose and the palate.
All right, so let's do the standard thing. Color.
This is, wait, so I have Blanc de Blanc in my glass. Do you see the difference in the colors?
Yeah, this is deeper and maybe, I wouldn't say orange, but there's a hue to it.
Yes. This is a little deep.
Yeah, it's a deeper golden. All right, so that's the color. Give me your nose descriptors. What happened?
This is still Blanc de Blanc.
Just dump it in there. I actually drank my other one, so it was empty. I should have brought two glasses. My bad. Do a rinse.
I just put the champagne in there. So
there you go.
Okay, so this is... So I can tell you off the fact that I'm already going to smell.
So what do you get on the palate? I mean on the nose.
Definitely Granny Smith apples. You have something, a hint smell of honey, but when you do your tasting, you're going to have Granny Smith in the front, and you're going to have pear and honey more in the back, and then it's going to suck you in off.
Mouthfeel is rich.
Yes, and it's...
It's a rich...
It's more in-depth, so it has more complexity to it than the Blanc de Blanc.
On the palate, unlike the other one, I do pick up that biscuity.
Yes.
You know, it's non-existent in the other one, mm-hmm. which is refreshing and fresh.
And that's why
this is the Blanc somewhat de Blanc, classic.
The Blanc de Blanc is aged 24 months. This is actually aged 48 months.
So that gives it that character too.
Mm-hmm.
48 months, Jesus. All right, so palette. What do you get on the palette? And again, does it replicate the nose?
It semi-replicates the nose. So you...
Anything not in the palette or new to the palette?
So for me, so I've had this 50 million times. So I always want to taste it again, but I already know, like, label-wise, but... Like, I still get hints of the apple. Granny Smith apple. I get hints of honey.
Yeah. The honey's not cloying, though. It's just kind of lays on top.
You have a mixed in with pears.
Mm. And then you have that, you know, biscuity. Tell me food pairings for this.
Oh, this one I love. Grilled chicken breasts, sauteed in light olive oil.
So it could take the grilling.
Yes.
It could take the
oil. On top
oil.
Of the stove, yes. Very light.
What about barbecue grilling?
Barbecue grilling, I go with rosé.
Okay.
I will always do rosé for grilling.
Okay. Good point to make there. So tick off to me again exactly what this bottling is.
This is our Premier Crew.
Okay. So it's the Beast Iverson.
Premier Crew.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, so we tasted two wines. In addition to the wine list answers, I will post the wines.
Yes.
All right, I got to do a quick wrap up. We've spent way too much time together. You've had too much fun with me.
I'll just leave right away.
You ain't leaving. It's picture time. All right, so if you have a question, suggestion, wine happening, or event, hit me up at samatthegrapenation.com. That's samatthegrapenation.com. Subscribe to the Grape Nation podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your pods. Leave a review if you like the podcast. The reason we ask you to subscribe is by subscribing, podcast pops up automatically. You don't have to search for it. You're reminded. There's Marvina sitting right there ready to talk to you. Follow us on Instagram at SBenRuby, on Twitter at BenRuby. I know a little confusing, but you can reach us on both with the hashtag TheGrapeNation. On Facebook, we are The Grape Nation. As I mentioned, we'll post Marvina's wine list answers and weekly wine sip choices selections on our social media. All right, Marvina, now I need some download. Where can we find more information in a general sense on Beast Iverson?
The best place would be our website, which is www.stuyvesantchampagne.com. And if we still...
No B?
Huh?
No B.
No B.
Okay.
Stuyvesantchampagne.com. And if you don't get the question there, we have two links. Either contact us, or there's a link that says email us, and we revert back all emails within 24 hours.
Okay. So that'll get you... You know, I've been on the site a million times. It'll show you bottle shots, descriptions of the wines. It'll talk about, you know, Marvina and everything. If we want to follow you and the brand on social media, where do we go?
So Business Stuyvesant Champagne is both our Instagram and Facebook.
Okay.
Myself personally, which I post more about my personal life, like having fun with my friends, stuff like that, different wines, is Marvina_Robinson.
Okay.
And Twitter, to be honest, I do not remember. We are not as active on Twitter.
So Instagram's your wheelhouse.
Yes, Instagram and Facebook, yes.
For a lot of people and all that. What about distribution? Talk to me about restaurants, stores,
you know, really
the net of reach. You know, are we out of state yet? Or
oh, yeah.
Give me a little intel on that.
We're definitely on the West Coast.
Okay.
We just landed a major. We just got onboarded to. We're onboarding to a major restaurant, Haven Mar by Mark.
Marcus Samuelson.
Yeah, Marcus Samuelson. So they're
picking
our Blanc de Blancs. We have a host of stores in the Brooklyn area, New York. Let me see if I can remember them offhand. Happy Cork, Bedvine, Green Grape, Harlem Wine Gallery. Venetaria restaurants.
So you're locally fairly well distributed,
yeah.
And working on more and more and more.
Yeah, working on more, and we're focusing on onboarding in the DMV area. So
okay.
That's up next. We were in a hotel before, where we changed distributors, so now we're relaunching, which I'm focused on when I'm down there next week.
So the good news is you're going to see more.
The good news is also, like, we ship to 48 states. So we have an e-commerce store.
So on the website, yep. If you want to buy, I mean, that's the easiest app
for
anybody.
Yeah, you go to our shop tab.
I was just wondering how many states and, you know, liquors, online. But you're pretty well covered.
Yes.
What are the two states that you can?
Hawaii and I think it's Wyoming.
Okay. You do Alaska?
We do Alaska. Alaska has express shipping, though.
Okay. All right. So you got all the intel. We've tasted through the wines. I highly recommend them. I praise and admire what you're doing there.
Thank you.
It's wonderful, and I only wish you continued success. I want to thank our guest, Marvina Robinson. Marvina is Beast Iverson Champagne. Thank you to our engineer, Armin, and everyone at the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sam Ben-Ruby, and you've been listening to The Grape Nation. The Grape Nation is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.